Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the AnaCap Financial Europe conference call. For your information, today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to your host, Mr. Chris Ross Roberts. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the AnaCap Financial Europe SA CCAF RAFE quarterly investor presentation for the period ending the 30th of June 2018. As set out on page 2 of the presentation, Justin, Ed and I will take you through the presentation, and then we will open the line to the Q&A session at the end. In addition to the Q&A session, please remember that you can send any questions through to info@anacapfe.com or through the website at www.anacapfe.com, where we'll endeavour to reply to them as soon as we can. Details can be found at the end of this presentation. Before we begin, can I please draw your attention to the disclaimer on page 1 of the presentation, which highlights that the presentation is produced solely for informational purposes and cautions against any forward-looking statements, and that by attending this call and reviewing the presentation, you're agreeing to the limitations set out on page 1 of the presentation. I'd like to start by turning to page 3, basis of preparation of the financial statements, before handing over to Justin. The results for AFE we are presenting today cover the period from the 1st of January 2018 to the 30th of June 2018. As the acquisition of the portfolio business was completed on the 21st of July 2017, there are no comparatives included for the financial statements for the previous year. In order to provide bondholders and other interested parties with comparative data for the 6 months to the 30th of June 2018 and the 6 months to the 30th of June 2017, this presentation includes the results of the portfolio business for the 6 month period to the 30th of June 2017. I'll now hand over to Justin, who will start by covering the highlights on page 4.
Thanks, Chris. Yes, I'd like to start with some key highlights from the second quarter, each of which will develop further throughout the presentation. First off, we completed 107.9 million euros of new portfolio purchases during the quarter. This was the result of pipeline developed over the prior period, which resulted in ERC of just under 565 million euros compared to ERC of 487.8 million as of the 30th of June last year. While this is a significant uptick on Q4 and Q1 deployment, it remains highly selective and focused on predominantly secured debt with further diversification of our ERC across key geographies. 43% of total ERC is now attributable to Italy as at the end of June, compared to just over 71% as of June 30, 2017. As discussed when we launched the business, we're rapidly becoming more balanced across our core geographies, consistent with AnaCap's longer-term track record. The last 12-month adjusted EBITDA of 92.8 million is up 23% compared to the prior year at 75.5 million. The leverage metrics are in line with the guidance, with net debt to adjusted EBITDA at 3.88 times, which is also down from 4.03 times in June of 17. And the LTV ratio is also down from 66.6% to 63.8% as of the end of June 30th, 2018. Core collections of 55.3 million for the 6 months ending June are 11% ahead of forecast and 10% greater than the collections for the 6 months ended in June of 2017. It's important to note that this is in spite of a period of limited purchases, as recent deployment is not yet reflected in collections, but rather collections coming from a seasoned back book, which is still growing. Finally, our market-leading cost structure with total operating cost, which includes overheads, of 25.9% of core collections for the 6 months ending June 30th, is supported by ongoing development in our digitally enabled operating platform. At this point, I'll turn it back over to Chris for financial highlights.
Great. Thank you, Justin. We're going to turn to page 5. Key financial highlights for the 6 months ended 30 June 2018, strong momentum and growth in key financial metrics. I'm pleased to report that we are continuing to see positive growth across a number of our key financial metrics. As anticipated, and given relatively modest deployment in the period prior to June 2018, revenue in the 6 months to the 30th of June 2018 has dropped by 16.9% to 34 million compared to the same period in the prior year. Substantially, all of the deployment in Q2 of new capital took place in the last few days of June, and therefore, as Justin said, no revenue is recognised in the period for recent deployment. However, core collections have grown by 10.1% to 55.5 million for the 6 months to the 30th of June. This reflects, firstly, a very strong 6 months where collections were ahead of forecast, and also the maturity of the back book, where there is a time lag between buying a portfolio and collections ramping up. Total operating cost ratio decreased from 26.2% for the 6 months to the 30th of June 2018 to 25.98% for the 6 months to the 30th of June 2018. And together with strong collections has driven a jump in LTM adjusted EBITDA to 92.8 million, up by 23% for the 12-month period. This results in a normalised adjusted EBITDA margin of 70.5%. It's worth noting that the operating cost ratio we refer to is the total operating costs, excluding non-recurring items, rather than the cost-to-collect ratio, and therefore includes all overheads of the business. Our overhead structure is predominantly variable and relative to the value of portfolios held in the business. Our relatively low overheads, driven by the use of our digital platform Minerva and its variable nature, results in an overall higher margin. In summary, AFE's total operating costs are market-leading. However, we should point out that the overall operating cost ratio is driven by strong collections in the period that includes the realisation of a few large positions that have a relatively low cost to collect as a percentage of collection. It also reflects the maturity of the back book acquired by AFE, where cost has been invested at expense in advance of receiving collections. The operating cost ratio can be impacted in the short term by significant deployment and onboarding costs, which are expensed as incurred. If we turn to page 6, growth in collections and ERC. We can see a graphic representation in the growth of gross collections since 2014 to 2017 and the comparative period for the 6 months, the 30th of June 2017 to 2018. As you're aware, the historic period included some asset sales of portfolios, which will not be the strategy on the go-forward basis, as the business has a permanent capital structure and not a closed fund capital structure. This should allow the business to grow over the medium term. From 2014 to 2017, the CAGR on core collections, which excludes sales of portfolios, shows a growth of 30%. In the current year, collections have grown by 10.1%, reflecting the maturity of the book and purchases made in late 2016 and early 2017, and a particular strong first 6 months of collections on some of our larger Italian positions being achieved slightly earlier than anticipated in our forecast for ERC. ERC itself has grown to 564.8 million following significant deployment in the June 2018 and is now 29% higher than at the start of the year, and 15.8% higher than June 2017. The increase in deployment will drive growth in revenue and collections, although given the secured nature of recent deployment, collections growth will lag revenue growth. Turning to page 7, market-leading cost structure and margins. So as we said, operating expenses have declined from 35% of collections 26% over 2014 for the last 6 months, and grown consistently at a significantly lower rate than core collections, i.e. total costs in the current year have grown by 8.7%, whereas core collections have grown by 10.1%. Within our total operating costs, the direct collections cost ratio decreased from 20.1% of core collections to 18% of core collections, reflecting the maturity of the book and some of the larger low-cost collections in the first 6 months. Overheads increased marginally from 6.3% to 7.9%, reflecting increased investment in the platform, in asset management and master servicing capability. Turning to page 8. Before I finish, let me finish on page 7. Normalised adjusted EBITDA has grown by 7.6% to 39 million compared to the 6 months to June 2017. The marginal change in margin reflects increased amounts collected on behalf of co-investors in the period compared to previous periods. These are included in collections but deducted from normalised adjusted EBITDA so as to reflect the cash profit attributable to the business. Normalised adjusted EBITDA for the last 12 months at 92.8 million is up 44% on the actual LTM to March 17. So in conclusion, overall total operating costs of operating the business are market leading and are predominantly variable in line with activity and assets under management. To date, they reflect the maturity of the back book. As you may recall, when a portfolio is acquired, the costs in the earlier months, first year, tend to be higher as the cost of onboarding the portfolio and any initial legal costs are incurred. Following deployment of capital in June 2018, we anticipate we may see a marginal uptick in costs relative to collections as new portfolios are onboarded and collections follow some months later. Therefore, whilst we anticipate a modest growth in adjusted EBITDA in 2018 before collections ramp up in 19 and 20 for the new deployment, we would anticipate a modest dip in LTM adjusted EBITDA in Q3 as portfolios are onboarded and a strong Q3 2017 drops out of the LTM adjusted EBITDA ratio. Turning to page 8, H1 attributable collections, 111% of December 2017 forecast, driven by acceleration of collections. In H1, we have collected 53.9 million. Which is 111% of the December 17 forecast. As we discussed on the Q1 call, during Q1, most of the increase in collections over forecast was driven by timing of collections being better than forecast related to a number of larger Italian positions that was forecast to be partly collected in June and December 2018. The timing difference accounts for most of the cumulative overperformance in H1. Given the nature of our secure portfolio with some larger average balances, we always anticipate some volatility over timing for the sale of collateral assets and update estimates with an ERC as part of our twice yearly full revaluation. While positive this half year, there may be times when asset sales are delayed or take longer to realise as we seek to maximise overall returns on a net NPV basis. Turning to page 9, ERC bridge, revaluation impact resulting in an additional 8.3 million of ERC. From the left-hand side of the bar chart, you can see the opening ERC at 31st of December at 437.9 million. Since that date, the 30th of June, we have collected 53.9 million, and the net roll forward to June 24 for the period adds an additional 2.8 million. Each half year, so the most recent being June 2018, a detailed asset-by-asset revaluation, including a review of estimated timing of collections, is performed on all portfolios. This has resulted in an uplift in estimated collections of 8.3 million. A substantial part of this uplift is on assets that we've collateral on, and the proceeds have now been received into the bankruptcy estate and are awaiting distribution. This can take up to 12 months or longer if there are a number of other creditors in the bankruptcy procedure. During the period, we acquired an additional 169.7 million of ERC across three geographies, all of which were on secure portfolios across the mix of corporate, consumer and SME at an average gross money multiple of 1.6 times. Given the average balance size of the SME portfolio, we anticipate an overall lower cost to collect than the average cost to collect. Turning to page 10, ERC by year and country, recent deployment builds in future growth and cash generation out to 2020. The graph on page 10 splits out ERC by year and country. 2018 includes actual attributable collections for June 2018, $53.9 million. You'll note from the profile that given recent purchases and the expected timing of collections, that the business has embedded growth in cash flow from its current back book out to 2020. In addition, given we have recently deployed capital across three geographies, collections by country are more diversified. Turning to page 11, net debt to LTM adjusted EBITDA at 3.88 times. You will note that the business has been highly cash generative since the acquisition of the portfolio business. We've seen normalized adjusted EBITDA growth of 44%, $92.8 million, with a market-leading cost structure, and we remain selective on how we deploy capital. As a result, we have seen a large drop in the leverage ratio from actual LTM to adjusted EBITDA in March 17 of 4.6 times to 3.88 times at the 30th of June 2018. In the offer memorandum, we also quoted a pro forma LTM of 3.71 times that took into account profits that would have been had we owned all the assets for 12 months at March 17. You'll note how we have demonstrated the effective deleveraging of the business from an actual 4.6 times LTM to EBITDA ratio in March 17 to 2.6 times in March 2018. In that period, we deployed $40 million of capital. In the 12 months to June 2018, we deployed $137 million of capital whilst maintaining leverage below 4 times. Clearly, given a large proportion of what was deployed in June 2018, the increased debt is included in the metric, but no corresponding collections. And you'll see from the previous slide that we've embedded growth in collections out to 2020. In the short term, following the recent deployment of a large amount of capital in 1 month, and only very modest collections from new deployment anticipated in Q3, there may be a modest uptick in leverage above 4 for a short period. I'll now hand over to Ed, who will cover ERC by geography, provide an update on our servicer panel, and a review of gross money multiples. Ed.
Thank you, Chris. Page 12 provides a breakdown of our ERC split by geography as at the end of June 2018 and a comparison relative to the December 17 position. Over the past 6 months, overall 84-month ERC has grown by just under 30%, from $438 million to $565 million. Our targeted deployment activity during this period has diversified our balance sheet. Our share of ERC in our portfolios in Spain has increased from 15 to 21%, Portugal from 14 to 27%, and Romania from 4 to 7%. The combined effect of these changes has reduced Italy's share of total ERC from 64 to 43%. We continue to target pipeline activity in all these markets, in addition to exploring selected opportunities in new markets where we see attractive risk-adjusted returns, for example, Poland, which Justin will touch on later. Turning to page 13, the deployment activity in the first half of 2018 has also increased the diversification of our servicer panel. The top three servicers still account for two-thirds of our ERC, consistent with our strategy of building long-term partnerships with leading servicing partners. But the mix across these services has shifted. The deployment activity in Spain and Portugal has reduced the relative share of Phoenix Asset Management in Italy from 42 to 28%. In addition, our overall panel has increased from 11 services to 13 during the period. This increase reflects our ongoing active panel management strategy with two new additions to the panel during the first half of the year. A litigation specialist in Italy, appointed to optimize our performance on litigation quality segments of our Italian consumer unsecured portfolios, and a new secured NPL servicer appointed in Portugal as part of a challenger strategy on our recent secured NPL purchasing activity. We continue to work closely with our servicing panel to enhance data capture and digital integration to drive incremental improvements in collateral realization and collections performance. And finally, on diversification, if you turn to page 14, you'll see a breakdown of our ERC by asset type. During the first half of 2018, our deployment activity has focused on secured portfolios across both the consumer, SME and corporate segments, asset classes with high levels of collateral backing, where ANACAP has significant experience and a track record that dates back to 2011. These portfolios have large average balance sizes compared to consumer portfolios, generally a lower cost to collect, and are underpinned by hard collateral. Secured assets now correspond to 61% of our ERC as at the end of June 2018, an increase from 44% at the end of December. Particular growth has been observed in the secured consumer NPLs, which has increased as a segment from 6% to 20%, and secured SME NPLs, which has increased from 29% to 34%. Turning to page 15, you will see our trend in gross money multiples. We've been very focused on deploying capital selectively in chosen geographies and asset types where we observe attractive returns. Whilst there has clearly been some downward pressure on money multiples, we believe that the knowledge we have gained over the past 7 years of working secured portfolios, together with our market-leading overall cost structure, allows us to price with confidence and achieve good returns on what we believe are NPLs with higher inherent quality backed by underlying collateral. This is evidenced by the high velocity of payback that we have observed in recent vintages. I will now hand over to Justin for concluding remarks.
Thanks, Ed. In conclusion, we've completed $107.9 million deployment in the quarter, which, as discussed, has led to significant further diversification across our core geographies. We remain highly selective and focused on where we currently have differentiated expertise extending back over a long period of time and where we see the best risk-adjusted returns, with the primary focus on these secured consumer and SME debt segments, asset types which are underpinned by significant collateralization. Overall, we continue to deliver strong financial performance, with core collections continuing to grow from a seasoned backbook, even as new deployment remains selective and not yet factored into either revenue or recent collections. The ERC of $564.8 million as of June compares to $487.8 million as of June last year, which represents almost a 16% increase. H1 collections of $55.5 million versus just over $50 million in H1 of 2017 is up 10.1% year on year, despite the slowdown discussed in deployment in Q4 of 17 and Q1 of 2018. The leverage remains within range at 3.88 times last 12-month adjusted EBITDA. And looking forward, we maintain a very large and diverse pipeline of portfolio opportunities across each of our core and targeted new geographies, particularly in secured debt, where we continue to see some of the best risk-adjusted returns. We see absolutely no slowdown in any of our core geographies, but rather continued growth, particularly in our sweet spot of real estate secured debt, which allows us to pick our spots carefully. This also includes further progress in Poland, which we've discussed previously, where we are currently in exclusivity on what would be AIF's inaugural portfolio transaction. However, this is not a new market to us. This leverages ANACAP's wider local investment track record, which includes a long period of review of the market and participation in a number of primarily secured debt sale processes in recent years. Overall, we're continuing to develop the AIF operating platform, including key hires within Galata Asset Management in Spain as we continue to develop our activities locally, and Phoenix Asset Management in Italy, as well as significant further investment in our digitally enabled platform. At this point, I think we'd like to turn it over to questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal. We will take our first question from Helen Rodriguez of CreditSights. Please go ahead.
Oh, hello there. Thanks for taking the questions. In the call, you mentioned something about GMMs, or I think you just said money multiples, being a little bit more depressed than in other years. Is that purely a function of mix, or is that also an observation on pricing trends? And just as a second part to that same question, into, you know, how do you weigh, you know, you said that, well, this is mitigated by the velocity of collection, and how do you think about that kind of trade-off between velocity of collection and GMM? And then the second question relates, in the appendix, you've got the revaluation, small revaluation. If you could just explain to us what that's from. Thanks.
Sure, I can start on money multiples, which Ed discussed briefly, but I think it really is, I guess you have to look at both factors. As you are probably aware, our business historically did include more of a blend between both unsecured and secured debt. And I think as we've discussed previously, we have typically seen higher money multiples historically on unsecured debt. So I don't think the change in the multiples we're seeing on secured debt is significantly different, particularly in terms of the cash flow velocity that we've historically seen in those portfolios. Yes, there is market pressure, and without a doubt across the board, in terms of overall pipeline, we are seeing pressure on money multiples. But I think there's far more consistency in what we've been doing historically, and it's simply more of a feature of our current focus on the secured side of our portfolio.
And, you know, the market pressure, is that because there's now 10 guys chasing assets instead of one guy, or is that just, you know, is that a small couple of percent, or is it, you know, can you give us a sense of orders of magnitude to the extent that that's possible? I don't know if it is.
I think it plays out quite differently in different geographies and even very specific asset types. So I don't think it's consistent. I think even within asset types, I think we've been able to review a very large volume of opportunities to select the ones where we see the best returns, and we often see more competition on particular processes versus others. We're seeing a lot of ability right now for us to mine our existing relationships, our experience locally in geographies, and critically our servicer relationships as well, to put ourselves in a position to win the deals that we do win. And I think we're in a comfortable position to continue to pass on the vast majority of deals that we do see. And I think, as I said, that plays out very differently across geographies, so it's hard to generalize that it's consistently 10 more bidders everywhere, because, in fact, we haven't necessarily seen a larger number of bidders in particular geographies, at least credible bidders. So, yes, I do think the overall impact on the secured side is incremental rather than transformational. However, it's fair to say we've not seen similar value currently in the unsecured segments of the market where we think the pressure has been more acute.
Got it. Great. Thanks for that. And then on the revals?
Yeah, so I'll move on to your second question. So if you look at, just step back, we do a full revaluation of our ERC every 6 months, and that resulted in a net increase in ERC of 8.3 million. But we also, the way we account for it on the balance sheet is we discount the ERC at a gross number, so it's a very high discount rate in the sort of high 20s. But we also have a number of different portfolio groups. So what you see overall, we've got a net credit to our P&L of about 1.2 million.
there was a write-up of some assets, which is recognised in revenue, in accordance with IR 15, from a particular group of assets. However, in a different group of assets, there was a downward shift of 2.4 million in net present value. But a large part of that portfolio is a co-investment portfolio, and therefore there's a contribution back from the co-investor by a reduction in the share notes, which led to a net impairment of $500,000. But overall, there's been a positive increase following the revaluation process.
Is there any sort of geographic themes in, you know, the ones that are positive and the ones that are negative?
The ones that are positive are in Romania, and the ones that are negative have been in Spain on residential assets.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Frank Lehman of Talo. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my question. The first one is a more capital market one. Did you buy back any of your outstanding notes, which trade around 90, or have you ever thought about potentially doing that? Maybe not at the current moment, but you know, the cash could hold back from your collections very soon again. Question number one. I do number two. I see that you expect a collection of about 70 million for the second half. What's your confidence level on that?
Yeah, let me answer those questions for you. So on the first one, the answer is no, we haven't. Yes, I'm always thinking about it, as we are constantly thinking about our capital structure, but it's not something that we have planned to do or in the short term, given that we want to deploy capital in the second half and early next year. But clearly, we're always looking at our overall capital structure. In respect of the second half, yes, you know, I look at it and think, gosh, that's a big uptick that we've got to achieve. If I look at last year, we had a very significant Q4 collection. So certainly Q3 is a lot quieter, given August is in there. There are a number of positions that are due to come out of a court process in December. It does make, you know, there is an element of nervousness about that, but to date we are tracking ahead of our forecast. But there's always a risk that something could slip marginally into January.
Yeah, I think we've had a good start to the second half. I think it is important to note that the trends that we've shown already, where our back book as it seasons does develop an increase in collection still, I think is why, you know, ultimately, you know, is what's underpinning that growth and forecast. This is not simply new deployment. This is also continued growth in the back book.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Best of luck.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad. Take our next question from Sonal Sodhi of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. Just had a question in terms of how should we think about like, sort of recurring cash flow? Like I was thinking that if you look at like oil companies, I mean, they also do a lot of specs, which is ahead of their reserve replacement. So markets actually get worried if they are not replacing their reserves. But in debt collectors lately, we have seen that the more you're investing, the more the investors are worried because they think that future returns are significantly lower. So they would like you to invest less. So I just, because if you look at like even your bond prices as well, and this is something that's affecting all debt collectors. So how should we as analysts like sort of think about it? Why is growth being penalized so much? And how can sort of the management sort of try to correct that?
Yeah, let me try and answer that for you. So one of the reasons we gave you page 10 was to enable you to look at, slightly unusually in the sector, that we have embedded growth in cash flow from the shape of the curves and the type of asset that we're buying. So we can see here, we can look out and you can look at our back book today, even without deploying any more capital between now and 2020, you can see an upward projection in adjusted EBITDA and profitability if you apply the cost to collect percentages to those numbers. So that's one. In terms of profitability, we're here at Anacap very focused on bottom line profitability, and our net profit for the period is good, and we're always going to be focused on driving real absolute returns through the business. And if we don't see the opportunity to invest in assets, we won't invest. And that's why during a period of 2017 stroke early 18, we invested a relatively modest amount of capital. So we look at things on an investment by investment basis. We don't have any large infrastructure that we have to keep operational. And therefore, every investment we make on a positive returns basis.
I think it's important to add that because of the nature of our seasoning portfolio, we don't need to chase growth in our deployment to still achieve growth. We also, I would say, what we're doing today is not new. I think we discussed on the question earlier that the focus on the secured side of our portfolio represents where we're seeing historically large volumes and actually dramatically higher supply in each of our core geographies across secured asset types. So I think it's where the market's going in terms of supply. Yes, there are demand, in pockets, particular demand in pockets of that, but where the market is developing in terms of supply aligns very closely with our own historical expertise.
Got it. Right. And just secondly, you mentioned that you're seeing more pressure on the unsecured portfolios in terms of demand-supply balance or imbalance. And why is that? Just want to understand relative to secured.
Well, I think you're probably aware more broadly in the market of where there's a lot of quite mature, well-established markets for unsecured debt. Clearly, the number of active participants in this space who have quite mature businesses in more mature markets, I think is where you see that competition reflected. I think if you look, as I said, at where the market's going, the unsecured market is not necessarily been a growth market in terms of volume of supply. So you have a lot of demand for an asset class which is not growing nearly to the same extent that secured debt is growing today. So I think that's where we see some acute pressure. It's not to say they're not good opportunities in the unsecured space, but again, if we look at where we have differentiated competitive advantages, we remain focused today more so on the secured debt side.
Right. And just very lastly, just in terms of onboarding, of course, you mentioned that as you have bought portfolios, you will have costs. So just wanted to understand, are these sort of like variable costs, and why, like, given that most of your collection is outsourced and I'm assuming you would pay your servicers based on how they actually collect, so why are the costs sort of so little bit ahead of the portfolios, the cash collections coming in? So just want to understand that dynamic a little bit better, please.
So there's always a mixture of the way we remunerate services. And there's certain activities that we take on when we're on board that might incur cost. That might be some local taxes or some cleaning up that we do. And there might be an element of fixed fee or onboarding fee paid to the servicer whilst collections are very minimal in the first 6 months. So costs do vary. If there's litigation that needs following up or completing, again, that might be in advance of collections.
Right. Okay. So it's just, but they do still remain mostly variable. So if you stop incrementally buying portfolios, the cost that you have to bear, the structure, that's a very variable cost structure and driven by portfolio activity.
Yes. So, I mean, if you look back at a previous presentation, I think it was in the Q1 presentation that's available on our website, I put some slides in there about how costs varies over time.
Right. Okay. I'll have a look. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We now take a question from Niall Considine of Man GLP. Please
go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my questions. The first one, actually, you may have maybe in the Q1 presentation that you just referred to, but I was wondering if you could break down sort of the collection cost for a secured versus an unsecured portfolio.
Again, it very depends by average balance. So if you look at one of the more recent portfolios that's a secured SME that's got a fairly large average balance, I'd anticipate the cost to collect on that is something like 16%, where on an unsecured portfolio with a much smaller average balance and a bit more litigation, the cost could be in their mid-20s.
Okay. That's helpful, thank you. And then secondly, just how do you think about the sort of the downside risks to your collections, just given sort of, let's say, some of the economic downside around politics and everything else that's going on in Italy? Do you have sort of sensitivities that you run on how you think collections might be impacted? Not so much timing, but I guess like value realization into a scenario where, you know, Italian GDP starts to slow for whatever reason?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say we're not big macro risk takers. I think implicit in our forecast, we are looking at very significant stress scenarios. I mean, obviously, you say not timing, but I still think that we remain more exposed as a volatility factor in our business to timing volatility. I think if you look at the high degree of underlying collateralization, we're even in very forced sale scenarios in illiquid markets or selling assets at heavily marked down prices versus current market values, we're still able to comfortably cover our collections. So I do think our portfolio does reflect a defensive posture. You mentioned Italy specifically. Frankly, I think one of the challenges and one of the reasons we've slowed down in Italy is not simply to diversify for the sake of diversifying away from the Italian market. We still see some attractive opportunities in that market. The reality is, I think as the deals become larger and more secured in nature, it is difficult to be competitive in many of those deals without probably having a more constructive view, let's say, of future real estate prices. And I think it's difficult to maintain a defensive pricing posture in some of the proceeds that we see. And I think that is indeed one of the reasons why we have not been as competitive in that market recently. It's more in our DNA, and I think it's fair to say that if you look at our historical track record in Italy, it may be quite backward-looking. It's reflective of an economic environment where we have a lot of experience when the market was not benefiting from an economic recovery, and we understand what collections could therefore look like when liquidity is in a much more difficult set of circumstances. And you've seen some element of upside recently in collections. A lot of that is because I think our forecasts remain more conservative than in pockets we're able to achieve currently.
Understood. Thank you. That's helpful. And then the final question, to keep ERC at 565, what would you need, or what volume of portfolio would you need to purchase over the next 12 months to sustain ERC, given what you expect to collect on the current portfolio in the next year, plus obviously the year 8 coming into year 7?
Yeah. So look, the tail on our business isn't particularly large. You know, it's a few million a year, say 5-6 million a year. And you can see, I've given you the sort of the ERC, if you like, by year. And you can assume a money multiple between 1.6 to 1.8, probably.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1. We now take our next question from Rory McLaughlin of GSO Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks for the presentation. I'm just looking really for the timeline on leverage over the next 2 to 3 quarters, just in the sense of obviously 4 times is expected by year end, but just in terms of Q3, Q4.
Yeah, so I would have thought leverage, and you know, depends we've got to get the quarter-on-quarter collections, but would be about just under 4.2 at Q3 and 3.75 at Q4.
Perfect. Thank you.
As we have no further questions, I would like to turn the call back over to you, Mr. Chris Roberts, for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay. Thank you, Elaine, and thank you very much, everybody, for attending. And if you've got any further questions, please don't hesitate to send them through the website or contact me. Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.